Welcome to Down to Brass Stats. Today is Tuesday, 2nd June, 2020. The number to call, 434-1790, or if you want to WhatsApp, you can send your messages to 266-4862. We go until 2 p.m. today. Mr. Dennis Johnson is the producer, and my name is Lisa Gale, and I'll be with you for the entire time, and that is from 10 until 2 p.m. Feel free to raise your questions, concerns, comments. If you want to offer suggestions, feel free to give us a call at those numbers. There is quite a bit to talk about. We can talk about some of the things that we have seen in the press, some we have seen in the, well, in particular the print media. We can talk about those things. We can also talk about the information we would have received from government as it relates to the protocols. We can talk about what's happening farther afield, either in the Caribbean region or over and away by our major trading partner, the United States of America. And right now, those three big ticket items being the coronavirus and the fallout, in particular, so many persons dying from it. We can talk about, and I'm speaking specifically about the U.S., and we can also talk about the economy, how it has plummeted, or we can talk about the current protest as a result of the killing of the man in the state of Missouri. And so much is happening over and abroad. We can also talk about what's going on here. I saw yesterday a lady called, and she talked about consistent water problems. We can talk about those. So many issues that can be raised at this point. I know it would have been gone for a little bit, but there were quite a number of things that persons up to this day are still raising as pertinent issues for them. So those are some of the issues that we can talk about. Actually, last week I read in the press the bank profits that were so high, but yet they are being recorded as a loss. So there are a number of things that we can share. I did raise, even when I was preparing for today's session, I had a list of a couple of things that are those key things, and I should really look for that list now. But just basically the major issues that are happening both locally and abroad. We are still seeing a significant fallout from the COVID-19 and its presence here. And that, my friends, is something that we will see for some time. We are seeing the government trying to put mechanisms in place to address those attendant challenges. And the latest issue now is the BOSS program, as a means of freeing up some fiscal space for government. We've heard the major commentators talk about their perspectives on it. I've had, of course, we talk about discussions in the boardroom, the classroom, but there are discussions in the bedroom, and then there are discussions in the living room. So many discussions have been taking place in so many rooms. Different people have had a lot of perspectives. I myself, having spent some time in the government, I've had 14 years before I would have exited the public sector. And I too have a perspective. I have a colleague who, her and I have been having some vociferous discussions about the same BOSS program, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. And then, you know, you hear different perspectives. I've also had the pleasure to hear the discussion on Sunday with Dr. Greenidge and the other panelists talk about what it is and what answer some of the questions from the press. From the public. Quite a number of questions were asked, legitimately so. And so there are a number of questions that came to the fore over the last few weeks. And there are a number of responses that have come. One of the things that I want to say is that in my prayers, I've been praying for witty ideas inventions and creative solutions to the major challenges that Barbados has been faced. And I'm pleased in a space that I'm in to see that some decisions have been made that have advanced what I call real creativity, and that I'm positive about, not able to speak to it publicly. But then we all know about the BOSS program, which many have argued is an ingenious one that is pretty creative. And as in anything, you will have people asking questions. And I always say questions are legitimate. We always have to be able to answer the questions. We also need to be very transparent in how we make decisions so that people can build trust, so you can get your buy-in. So for sure, that is something that I've observed as well, that sometimes you hear the noise or you hear the feedback and you think that it is noise, but it is always important for ideas to contend, for different perspectives to be brought to the fore. And this is what Brass Sacks is about, hearing the different sides. Yes, there is the element of partisan politics that continues to come through. That is something that seems to be or will be with us for a very long time. But sometimes it muddles the real authenticity of an issue or the real issue. And if we can sometimes tear off the layers and tear off the veil and see some things for what they are, I think that then helps a discussion to be rich. And sometimes it even helps for changes to come to the fore for some of the proposals that come into being. I remember when we were negotiating the EPO for Barbados, we've had so many different negative lists. We've had to go back to the drawing board. We have to come back, and there may be a country that says, no, not potatoes or not ketchup. Oh, no, we're not budging on this. And the CARICOM and CARIFORM region then had to modify its position so that when we go to the EU, we're going with one unified decision. So in making decisions and in coming to the final and the best position, you will have perspectives from different people that you may not share in the early stage. So that in and of itself is a very good one. So a number of issues that we will talk about today. As I said, the number to call, 434-1790. The WhatsApp will be 266-4862. I am Lisa Gale, and Dennis Johnson is also in the chair above. Down to Brass Sacks.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
Hi, this is Glenn Murray.
Hi, Glenn.
I really hadn't expected to get it, you know, to be blessed to hear your voice first time in and first time out. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good. A couple of issues I want to raise with you. One has to do, but before I get there, you made some comments. You used a couple of terms which I'd like to indicate my personal objection to.
Objection?
My objection to him, sorry. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the correction. It has to do with, you talk about when people are offering different opinions, mm-hmm. they're questioning, they're challenging. It is being, I do not think moderators should fall into the political jargon of describing them as noise. I think it is insulting.
A moderator called it noise? Which moderator did that?
You just mentioned noise.
And what else did I say? I mentioned a myriad of things. I said when you call it noise, you call it differences. I say sometimes it can be partisan politics, but when you pull away the layers, but you want to focus on the noise.
I just feel that we should treat it as legitimate democratic discussion.
Right, and I have a challenge when a caller thinks that a moderator is being political when he chooses a word. That's what I have a challenge with.
No, I'm not saying that you were being political.
But you just said that, so I can take issue with that as well.
Using political terms, this has been trotted out by politicians, not have been. Anyhow, I just want to say that I myself think that as a caller, that my legitimate concerns, the results of my thoughts, mm-hmm. are being described as being a naysayer or a nitpicker or complainer. Those were the terms that were popular nowadays, is boiled down to noise.
But you do admit, though, Glenn, that we do have naysayers, we do have nitpickers, and we do have a lot of noise.
And that is part of democracy.
And what I went on to say, which you should have also embraced, is that ideas must contend. All ideas must contend. Because when you draw away the layers, and then I use the reference of the negotiating for in that particular theater, the Epoch Theater. Right. So why then would you just focus on the one little small word?
But listen, because that is the most popular one being used these days. But the point I want to make, if you are genuinely concerned and interested in practicing democracy and freedom of discussion, anything said should be just taken in the stride as part of a different opinion, and not has to be categorized and labeled as something which is critical of the person.
So you shouldn't then, therefore, if I'm reading you to your true form, you then therefore shouldn't have objection for which you're having. You're contradicting yourself.
No, I'm pointing out.
You are contradicting yourself.
I'm pointing out that when you indulge in those terms, it is...
It sends the wrong message?
Undermining, devaluing the concept of democracy and transparency and opening. If it's open, it is open.
No, that would be if, and I want to finish there, particularly to say, now, if I thought that the objections and the comments made by persons was noise, if I thought that it was noise, then...
What do you mean by noise?
I'm finishing here. I'm being very deliberate. If I thought that persons' perspectives and their ideologies, etc., and the difference of opinion was noise, then I would have made a direct point to say, I come on this program and I hear a lot of noise, and then I will go on. And that's not what I said. I started by saying there are a number of issues before us. We have different perspectives. When you draw away the layers, I talked about the proposal and I went on. So I don't want you to misconstrue what I was saying.
I'm not misconstruing. With due respect, I'm not misconstruing. What constitutes noise in your opinion?
When I hear, but when my ears are hurting me, when I'm hearing something that adds absolutely no value to anything that I'm currently doing.
Or when you're hearing something that you do not agree with.
No, disagreement is not noise. And that's what you want me to say, but sir, I will not say that.
I actually define noise, so I'm not asking, what do you mean by noise? That's all.
No, if I can take you back to 2000 and either 14 or 15, I hope the former Prime Minister doesn't hold me. His name is Prime Minister Frandl Stewart. He referenced some objection to something that was happening in the public domain, and he called it noise.
So, because
do you recall that?
So because you said it, you feel...
No. I'm saying that I used that word because I drew from that term that you use different terms to define what people are saying. And I don't think we should spend more time on that. You share what you want to share today. Thanks.
Thanks for telling me about defining...
Former Prime Minister.
Okay. Yeah, all right. But what I want to really get on to, I want to say thanks to the government for having the good sense of postponing the implementation of the enforcement of the postal boxes at houses, or resident at buildings, resident houses, etc. I thought it should not only be postponed, I think it should be dropped altogether. I think that and no justifiable reason has been given to me except as to make it more efficient. And nobody has defined what efficient means in this context. Now we have a postal service that has been operating since 1852 as they carry a particular service. Not that it has been modernized along the way. It's not been exactly since 1852. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying the ability of a postman to go to a house and knock and say, hi, how are you, post, etc. There's a relationship that builds up between the household and the postal officer, man or woman. I am yet to get the advantage where what would be the benefits and gains? What would it benefit the postal service? How would it benefit?
You
the
just
postal?
Said efficiency. You said except to say efficiency. If they argue that's efficiency.
What do you mean by efficiency? What do you think could be meant by efficiency in those terms? In case you know about the subject that I do, what do you think efficiency means in those terms?
Reducing time. You just said building a relationship and all that, which I don't think the role of a postman is. That is one of the attendant. That is one of the extras. Let me tell you something. If I go somewhere, if I'm a postman and I go to drop off mail and I drop it through the person's louver, unfortunately, the person has some water and some Clorox and some detergent they're about to mop. Don't know that the postman is going to pass. The postman, in his good sense, he drops it in. And you know where it goes? It goes in the basin with the water. You think I will be pleased? So to reduce that inefficiency of that person having to reprint that mail and all the stress that goes along with it, the postman could drop it in the safe mailbox And then that, to me, would increase the efficiency. He would come, he would drop off, and he would move on.
How many complaints do you know there have been of that kind of incident?
I have never worked in the post office.
So you're theorizing?
No. You're theorizing. You're saying that it doesn't reduce the efficiency.
When you're talking about, I'm trying to get what is meant by efficiency. You understand? I mean, I still don't understand. Because what you're doing, a postman and the postal service is more than just a delivery of mail or whatever. It is a part of it's a social institution that has been embedded in the Barbadian society for a very, very long time. There are postmen who go there, especially the elderly recipients, their clients, and they can tell and sometimes report to other authorities when they're not well, when something is wrong with the problem. A postal box
can. So your postman he does that for you? Your postman does that for you?
Or a
woman?
Your postman can if he...
No, I'm asking you. You just asked me earlier if I know of any complaints. I'm asking you if your postman does that to and for you.
No, not necessarily because he doesn't have to do it for me, it doesn't mean he does it for other people.
Okay, so you're theorizing then. Okay, let's both theorize.
Yeah, I'm not theorizing. You're the one who brought this here. Anyhow, the point I want to say though is that I thought it was a way of trying to make money out of people again.
No, so what about the locked gates and the dogs and also the stealing that has gone on? There have been a few, not a lot, but there have been a few motorcycles that were not where they were supposed to be when they were left.
But we're talking about postal boxes.
No, we are talking about the postman in the context of the postman going into the neighborhood to deliver mail. The new requirement is for them to have a mailbox. You're asking me the question about efficiency, and I shared with you about the inability. So let's say you drop the mailbox,
that was the mail.
That's not speculation. That has happened on more than one occasion. My mail has been, I've come home and I've found my mail wet. Fortunately, I have a mailbox and have had one for a number of years now. But prior to that, because of the situation of the house, the postman would drop it in the patio chair or different places. And in the past, with the water, if the rain falls, the mail soaking wet. So ever since then, years ago, we've increased the efficiency of the postman just passing, dropping, and leaving, and going about his place and reducing his time on the road, being able to go into another neighborhood. So that is efficiency. You just said you can't see what the efficiency is.
You're speaking with me with great authority. Have you seen a study, any documentation?
Sir, there's some things called inferences and common sense. That's all I'm using.
Inferences and common sense.
Yes, that's all I'm using.
But I'm sure you also know.
But you're also theorizing because you haven't done any study, but yet you're saying that it reduces it makes more money.
There's something also known as empirical evidence gained from testing, experimentation, observation.
I did that at the University of the West Indies. Quantitative methods, if you please.
I'm asking about empirical evidence. You're relying on hunches.
All I will say, Glenn, with all due respect, both of us know that decisions don't just come out of a hat. These things come from. Let's say
you are assuming again.
That's not an assumption. That is my experience in government service, for which you have far more experience than I do. These things don't just come out of a hat.
I'm dealing with this particular instance. Do you have the?
I'm finished with that. You can wrap up there. I'm finished with that.
Okay. Thank you very much for allowing me, but I still see that I've told you what I think.
You started out by saying you commend them for extending the time now you're wanting disbanded.
Random postponed in November or September, drop it all there, because it also imposes a penalty, a financial penalty, on householders who sometimes can least afford it, especially at this time.
I would end by just simply saying seatbelts. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective, Dr. Brastat.
Good morning, madam.
Hi, good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your good self.
To your good self, too.
Even the best goodbyes are also difficult. But for those who trust in the Lord, the memory is much more sweet than bitter. For it is never forever how good it is when we can honor those who have saved others. Quite recently, The deaths were announced of two educators, and now the third is added. And it is with great interest that all three were connected to the St. Michael's School. It is with deep regret that Dame Patricia Simmons is now listed along with Miss Ennis and Dr. Randy Griffith Watson. Dame Patricia was indeed very dedicated in all of her endeavors. I recall when there was the talk about a referendum to change the Constitution, making Barbados a Republican state, behind closed doors, it was said, it reported to the voters, would you like a Barbadian to be out of state? Dame Patricia said that would be a loaded question. I was involved in quite a number of conversations before. One jokingly, she said to me, I am going to recommend that you are the editor of the defunct Beacon newspaper. To her family, friends, the national executive of the BLP to which she served, and the Labour Party in general, I extend my deepest sympathy. Lord, we thank you for those who serve their communities as first responders. We humbly ask you for their safety in your kingdom. We rest well when we are in the loving arms and perfect will of God. And in conclusion, I've received quite a number of phone calls pertaining to the front page article on the front page of last Monday's Nation, May 26, 2020, would we split for my command. Lawful and settled authority is very seldom resisted when it is well employed. Let's look at four P's. Party, policy, principle, and personality. But before so doing, here's an open question. Why the letter P is like a fault train? Because it is the first in pity and the last in help. I shall now deal with the four P's. Party first, policy second, principle third, and personality fourth. People who are masters in their own house are never tyrants. I consider myself as an elder of the party. Therefore, in difficult situations, when hope seems feeble, the boldest plans are surfaced. As far as personalities are concerned, shallow men believe in luck. Strong men believe in cause and in fact. Thanks for your patience as you listen for your comment, ma'am.
Sir, it's always a privilege to hear you pronounce on issues of national import, and you usually have a very sound perspective. Yes, I join with you, as in the rest of Barbados, and in particular those persons closely related to the St. Michael School, and share also my condolences to the passing of those very key and sound, and as you said, very intelligent educators. I've only had a close connection with Dr. Wendy Griffith Watson. She and I we spent one semester together on campus in the same class, had the same project. And I was a little girl. And she was en route to her doctoral thesis. And I would say I sat at her feet and engaged her in a lot of discussions. And she was very... I got a lot from her. I liked her very astute and very postured self. And I've not had any connection with the other folk, but I do join with you in sharing my condolences and wishing the families and those connected, encourage them to reflect on the positive memories, because they've dearly left quite a number of positive memories. And then you spoke about the letter P. The letter P is an interesting one. The only thing I will say now is just pinch. it helps us to wake up, to alert ourselves and to become aware of where we are. So But thanks hugely for your contributions. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Miss Gail.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay. Miss Gail, I want to discuss two issues with you this morning. But before I do that, I would remind you, because I think that you would be aware of this. It's recorded in Scripture that Jesus was walking on the border of Samaria and Galilee on his way to Jerusalem when he encountered 10 men with leprosy. And only one returned to give the Savior thanks for the leprosy. So disgusted was Jesus that he asked, where were the nine? Where the other nine? He said, weren't there 10? Only one came back. It was a Samaritan too, who returned to give him thanks. I can leave that where it is. I want to respond, ma'am, this morning to Caswell Franklin, who was on the program yesterday. And I think that I heard some things, ma'am, that were incorrect.
Did you call in yesterday?
No, I didn't.
I wonder why you didn't call in yesterday. The gentleman was on yesterday.
I was on the road. And the truth is that I get bewildered sometimes when, and people can say the same for me when they hear my voice, right? But the truth is, I believe that if you're going to speak the issue, and I agree with you wholeheartedly in your preamble, you're going to speak the issue, despite the fact you may have an allegiance or have ties to a party. I speak the truth, for heaven's sake. Né? I mean, that's all it takes.
Did I say that? But go on.
No, I'm saying.
You said, like you said in your preamble, so anyone listening to you would assume.
And partisan and so on. I can't quote you verbatim, but along those lines, you would have spoken. I think that's one thing that people need to do. Regardless if persons don't agree with what you say, or if they agree, you understand me? You must speak the truth, for heaven's sake. No.
But only because during my vacation I watched a documentary on a gentleman called Albert Einstein.
Because
I spent some time learning about what was in his head, his experience, his history, etc., that I will respond to you and say, he believes in the theory of relativism, etc.
Yes.
But you said that even if you are from a particular party or whatever, you still mm-hmm. should speak the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And my only response to you was, well, I know that there's only one truth, but I know there are many truthful experiences. what I would say is that people speak from their truth. People speak from their perspective, and people speak from what they believe, and therefore your feeling and your viewpoint of a particular matter may be very different from Dennis's, simply because Dennis holds a different view and he is seeing from different eyes. But I digress. Go on.
That is also true. But Mr. Franklin spoke yesterday vehemently, and he spoke to the Protection of Wages Act, Cap 351. And he has made it abundantly clear that the BOSS program, for which the Martin-led administration is now about to introduce, would have to take the rigorous turn of amending sections of the Constitution to accommodate it. And I want to quote, ma'am, where you would have quoted from.
Mm-hmm.
He quoted Section 3, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And I will read Section 3, and I also read Section 3, paragraph 1 and 2. Subsection.
Right.
Sorry.
Because he mentioned
subsection 2.
Yes.
You can put it up in. In all contracts of employment, wages, or a worker shall be made payable, mm-hmm. in legal tender and not otherwise. This is exactly where he would have quoted yesterday.
Yes.
And if in any such contract the whole or any part of such wages is made payable in any other, in any other manner,
mm-hmm.
such contract should be legal. No.
Should be.
Should and void.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Illegal and null and void.
Right.
He went, now, this is what he said, right, that I intend now to court. Notwithstanding subsection 1, which is the one I just read, the wages of a worker under contract of employment may, ma'am, may, in law, ma'am,
normative.
When the word may is used, it means, therefore, ma'am, that a discretion can be exercised.
Yes.
May, with the consent of the worker, mm-hmm. with the consent of the worker, I repeat it twice, be paid by check drawn on a bank license under the Banking Act, Cap 322, or by postal order. Now, there's a doctrine in law, ma'am, called informed consent. It carries three major elements of it, right? First one is disclosure of information. Second is the competency of the person to make a decision. And the third one is the voluntary nature of the decision. That is the doctrine of informed consent, right? Mm-hmm. Consent, sorry. Right? Now, the doctrine of general consent carries no explanation. In other words, the general consent means, right, I'm going to draw an example. Let's say you're the owner of a vehicle, right? You borrowed my vehicle, I give it to you to use, for use, right? Under the doctrine of general consent, right, implied or express, that vehicle can be, you can interpret that you can use the vehicle one or more times under the doctrine of general consent. But when it comes to informed consent, it means that, therefore, what the route that the government is now on is what is known in law as informed consent, because that the civil servants of this country are now being informed as to every single aspect and component of the BOSS program. Mm-hmm. Every single aspect. So I'm saying that when you can come as a general secretary and set about, ma'am. Ma'am, we have financial institutions in this country who do direct debits with the clients. When people come to borrow money, they borrow they borrow through the informed consent of the lender.
This is where the student in the law class goes like, sir, you are either talking over my head or, sir, could you repeat? Could you kindly make it very layman friendly, because you have gone a little too far. So you're trying to explain informed consent and general consent. I heard you, but go back to the principal point of saying that, you know, you mentioned that what Caswell mentioned yesterday, he did not mention something else, and then you went on to that. So just make a point steady.
I was making the point in subsection 1 is that it spells out that the wages of a worker under contract of employment may, with the consent of the worker, be paid. So in other words, the worker, the employee, through his own, his or her own consent, can determine how they want to be paid. It's the act, right, ma'am.
Yeah, but I just to say that was probably speaking to how you're paid. So in other words, legal tender speaks generally to cash, but you can get your money paid through a bank draft, or you can get your money paid through the, so that you don't have to get physical money, you can go to the ATM, or, you know, you have a relationship with your banker, etc.
Right.
So that allows flexibility there.
Right. But precisely. But the point I want to make, ma'am, the point I want to make is that every employee, mm-hmm. through the doctrine of informed consent, mm-hmm. determines that he now want to be part, through the option exercise or given to him by the government through the BOSS program, that he or she now wants to be a part of that. That is an expression by the employee,
yes.
As that this is what they want. How then can it run afoul with the law? It's like under the Sexual Offences Act. If a man is having sexual intercourse with a woman, and at any point that woman decides that he must stop, and he refuses to do so, then he can be charged for it under the Sexual Offences Act. But consent was given before, but it was withdrawn. That's the power of consent, ma'am. Under the doctrine of
interesting consent. Interesting choice of analogy. But I hear you loud and clear. I understand you. You have any other points to make? I want us. You're not there? Okay. I just want to go on to a few WhatsAppers who have said, one or two persons in relation to my first caller. They shared that a person can still have a conversation with a person in the neighborhood, but the presence of a mailbox doesn't stop that. And then particularly this one, where one says that postmen have been asking for this for some time. So having not done the research, just to respond to the first caller, that there clearly has been one or two persons who, not one or two, this person is saying that this is something, and I don't know if this person is related to the postman, but they said that this is a request that have been made for quite some time now, and it is a welcome change on the part of the post persons. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
I'm calling you for the first time, and I have a few queries relative to the Emergency Act as it relates to church services.
Yeah, at the beginning of the program, I had written a list of some of the things that we could discuss, and I mentioned a few. And that was one of them that I didn't mention. I also wanted to mention the many heroes and heroines that emerged out of this crisis and a couple others. So thanks for bringing that to the fore, but feel free, go ahead.
Yes, please. My concern relates to, one, the fact that you are required during worship
to wear a mask.
Wear a mask. And that's one of the challenges, because singing in a mask is something that is pretty challenging, as well as it does not say whether or not, as a matter of fact, it says everybody must wear a mask, which means that the officiants must wear masks as well. And speaking with masks on muffles everything and makes it very difficult for communication. The other aspect relates now to the persons, senior citizens, which is persons 70 years and over.
Yes.
A number of our churches have the major part of their congregation being seniors, and as well a number of the ministers are seniors. Am I to understand that if the pastor is 70 or over, that he will not be able to attend a regular service and officiate based on what the stipulations are saying? When I look at the regulation, I am not of a legal mind, but it says under the section U, special services to be attended only by persons 70 years of age
or older
are allowed.
Before you go any further, I want to ask you two questions.
Yes, please.
Clearly you are coming from the church. You are a person who either attends. Are you a senior member of a church in Barbados?
I'm senior, yes. Right. Not 70 yet, but yes.
No, not senior in that regard. Senior as in position. Do you hold an office? Right. So when I looked, and I've had one or two conversations with persons who fall in your category, and with a certain level of bewilderment, you read the protocols, and you wondered...
Why does it appear as though there is some level of discrimination taking place today?
I don't feel that way.
That's one minute. I say discrimination because The stipulations regarding shopping and that sort of thing, where you had the special days set aside for seniors to do the business, that has been lifted.
Right.
So that they can now interact generally. But you still maintain the stipulation as it relates to worship or to church services.
All right. So
I understand the challenge where worshippers normally would tend to greet one another, but the stipulation is there that
there should be
there's to be no touching and those sort of things. So the question then is, why do we maintain this particular regulation as it relates to the church when it is not being applied elsewhere?
Okay. So it's a legitimate question. And I did see, I did have a conversation, as I said, more than one, about this scenario. And I think my response at that time, having not read the entire set of protocols, was a little... I went back to the person, but we haven't had the conversation as yet. I think mine was a little short initially. What I did share with them was, these are some difficult times. Always remember the intent and the purpose of the protocol. What is it for? It is to reduce the incidence of the spread of COVID-19. And because of the church meeting, because there's a very big distinction, and you are senior within the cloth, and you therefore know this, the church is the people and not the building. This is just a meeting place that we go to for our fellowship and our communion and those other things, but they do not define us. They are, best should I say, there's a big part of us, but it shouldn't be the only thing that defines us. I'll say that first.
I agree.
Secondarily, the COVID came upon us, and we don't want the older persons who are what we call in the higher, the bracket of higher incidence, or they are more, there's a greater propensity for them to contract COVID. We're trying to protect them. We, meaning the government, we're trying to protect them, and therefore we've put more stringent measures for them. So a special service, because as you know, I didn't see her for a long time, and a big hug. That happens at church. Church is a very, you know, very congenial. We do all of that, and it is a little difficult. I was at church the weekend before the shutdown, and we had a meeting, a church meeting, and the pastor shared, you know, these things may happen, let us be prepared, etc. But on that day, there was quite a bit of hugging. We were past March 16th. This was the weekend of the 27th, around there. And there was a lot of hugging, and I was a little surprised at the freedom for which the congregants hugged each other in the midst of what was going on. And I had done a brass tacks that same week. You know, we were starting to get a higher incidence of contractions, etc. But people aren't always as... And, you know, people say, well, we can eat serpents, we can trample serpents, and we can drink poison, and that's in the Bible, and not be affected. And I still believe that with my faith. I also believe that there are times when we need to exercise vigilance and sensibility and sense.
Simple wisdom.
And this is what is being called, this is calling on us. Now, the incidents with the element there with the ACs, that's a little difficult for somebody who has a church office and all they have in a building where there's no opportunity to open the window for the air condition to not be. So I think what has been happening before is there have been discussions with the leaders, and there have been changes to accommodate persons who are negatively impacted. And I think the same thing is for the church. The church just needs to speak to the government about those elements in the protocol that are not working for them, so that there can be a modification in the next directive. That's what I would say.
Okay.
And then on the point of the whether it is deliberate, remember we have the Antichrist. Don't forget that, sir. In
we'll
anything,
never forget it.
Don't ever forget that. So sometimes I find our responses seem to be like, sometimes we forget the world that we are living in, for we wrestle not against. We know that verse, and I think our church members, church leaders in particular, and we must know that we are not operating in a normal space, and there will be some things that will not work in our favor. That's what I will share with you, sir, with great love and respect.
Thank you. I try not to list it in that context,
mm-hmm.
because I became annoyed because I've seen a number of posts via WhatsApp
mm-hmm.
that makes it look as though the church has been targeted by the regulations that are set out.
I do not agree
with that concept.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, recognizing the volume or the number of seniors
mm-hmm.
that you have. In some instances, you may have a congregation that has only two young people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two or three persons under the age of 70.
Whoa.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then...
How do you treat with that?
Well,
they will have church and the young people will stay home. No, I'm serious. That is a very practical reality. They will go to church with an aunt or with somebody else, but not to the congregation that has the older, the over 70.
What happens when the minister is 70 or over?
By now, he should have had a contingency plan. What do you call it? Not a contingency plan, a succession plan. And therefore, he can have that other person preach for him. Or I'm very serious. COVID has presented a number of challenges, not only to economies and airlines, but families, people, constructs, all kinds of entities have been impacted. And what it calls for us to be adaptable, flexible, be able to welcome change.
Which has to be done now.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be done. It was not necessarily done before,
mm-hmm.
and those changes would have to be made now. But in the meantime,
mm-hmm. what it says
is that based on the regulation, which as I said earlier, appears based on the opening of the economy and the opening of the general societal association
mm-hmm.
with the social distance or the physical distancing and everything in place
mm-hmm.
that you have this stipulation that applies only to this group creates a challenge
because only this group has that much touching.
but you have stipulated there is to be none,
right? So trust me, when we look at the videos of how COVID is passed and I'm having a conversation with you. And as I speak, my viral droplets come to you in probably as much as one foot.
Right. Okay.
And you are a little ways off, more than a foot, sorry. It probably goes three, sometimes it can go as far as 5 feet. If I'm singing, and you know how we do at church, we sing, we praise, we raise our voices, we express ourselves. We should be doing that at home too. So what we should be doing is really encouraging our congregants to also continue to seek God and to pray and to spend time in His presence, etc. We will get back to corporate worship at some point. But remember, worship is not even only, and I have also noticed even in the discussion.
It does not only relate.
People are limiting it to singing a song. You know, and this is the time for the greater education of the congregants that they must know. When I come down here to Brass Tacks, I'm worshiping my God.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle.
You know, it is a lifestyle. It is a way of doing things, and we must do it with vigor, with intention, and with love. But I'm glad that you called. I'm glad that you were able to share your perspective. And I hope that more members of the Kingdom of God understand that, you know, in life we will have some challenges, as Jesus said. But you know what He said? Take heart. I will be with you.
Okay,
so that's my
solace.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Dr. Brass Tacks.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, sir.
I thought it my duty.
Mm-hmm.
Having heard an attempt being made to confuse you, the whole island.
An attempt to confuse?
An attempt to confuse.
Whoa, strong terms.
And certainly has confused himself on this doctrine of informed consent. The doctrine of informed consent.
This person sounds like my friend's father. Are you? Are you who you are?
I don't know.
Okay.
You have to tell me who your friend is. Then I will tell you.
No, I won't tell you who my friend is, but I know that we at one point met in Culloden Road. I will say that much.
Very well, I'm not sure. Yes, the doctrine of informed consent
mm-hmm.
is a doctrine based in negligence.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with It is an American doctrine.
So question, you also come into kerfuffle, or you come into to bring elucidation?
This is elucidation, enlightenment.
Okay.
All the things as a public service.
Doctrine
as
of
a public
consent.
Service. Mm-hmm. Informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
It is an American, North American doctrine, which is based on the principle. And I said it's the doctrine of negligence.
Mm-hmm.
It is based on a principle that a patient is entitled to know all the risks involved in a particular medical procedure, operation, whatever you may call it. And the doctor is obligated to explaining it to him
mm-hmm.
to get his consent if he wants to proceed.
Okay.
That is the doctrine of
informed consent.
It is in sharp contradistinction to the English doctrine, which says doctor knows best. So that a doctor under our English system, Barbados is attached to that, may proceed if in the process he thinks it is important enough to do A, B, and C. He's protected. If he takes a professional opinion based on his experience
mm-hmm.
and his observation to proceed in a particular manner. There are two distinct principles,
yeah.
One North American, one English. But to suggest that the doctrine of informed consent has anything to do with workers' rights to salaries and that kind of thing was preposterous.
So what about the doctrine of general consent? Because the caller also mentioned general consent.
Well, my dear, sorry, mm-hmm. that's unprofessional to say that. What's your name again?
Lisa Gale is my name. If you want to refer
Ms.
to
Gale.
Me, I can be Mrs. Lisa Gale.
Mrs. Gale, the doctrine of consent has to do with every possible thing. If you wish me to give you a ride in my car, I will have to consent to that. If I wish for you to allow me into your house, that has to be consent. So that's not a legal doctrine. But if you go specifically to speak about the doctrine of informed consent,
mm-hmm.
that in law is a specific doctrine based in negligence.
Okay.
Nothing to do with what the caller tried to confuse the whole country about. And he did it so passionately. And he was so forceful and so passionate. I am sure he did not know he was talking foolishness.
Boy, oh boy. This is down to brass tacks.
Yes, I very well, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Good morning.
Morning, ma'am.
Hi, good morning.
Good to hear you again.
Good to hear you, sir.
Thank you. And good morning to Mr. Johnson and good morning to all listeners.
Mm-hmm.
On December 17, 2010, Muhammad Bouazizi reached his limit. He was a 26-year-old street vendor in Tunisia who was frustrated with being unable to find a better job. He was also aware of the official demand for bribe. On that particular morning, inspectors confiscated Muhammad's supply of pears, bananas, and apples. And when they took his pears, he resisted, and some witnesses say that a female police officer slapped him. Eventually, Muhammad committed suicide. Muhammad was dissatisfied with the social system in his country, and that is sometimes what is the cause of unrest and civil protest. In the United States of America now, we are having a similar situation where an incident between a police officer and a civilian caused a whole country or partially a country to be on the wave of protest. When people believe that the local government and the communists serve their needs, there is little desire to protest. But what does protesting achieve? It do sometimes accomplish a cause, but it can also have its problems. As you can see that the United States president now is thinking of bringing in the big stake. So then we may ask ourselves then, what really is the solution? Is there a better way? A according to the Bible, there is a government that God has set up in heaven that will replace this failed political and economic system that leads to protect. A prophecy about the rule of this government says at Psalms 72, 12 and 14, he will deliver the poor one praying for help, also the afflicted one and whoever has no helper. From oppression and from violence he will redeem their soul. Many people do not believe that a government by God could eliminate the reason for protest. They think it unrealistic. It might seem to be, yet many have developed confidence in God's rulership. In conclusion, the only solution to all problems in this world today, we believe it or not, is Jehovah's kingdom being ruled by Christ Jesus. We cannot get it through. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much. A couple of years ago in 2016, I attended a leadership conference with quite a number of speakers, but there was this gentleman who was a former Marine, and he talked about when he was training and he saw his leader experience a nail, something cut off the top of his finger, a chisel or something. And he saw that the man did not flinch. He couldn't understand what was happening. And he said, the human race, we do not like pain. But in order for us to grow and to go on, we have to lean into the pain. So if something is hurting you, naturally and instinctively, we say, ouch, and we pull back. Not that you should go forward in pain, but he was saying in scenarios, in situations, in difficult circumstances, we have to learn to lean in. And I took from that very personally. I've put it in my life and in something that has really helped me along the way. Being able to experience pain, see the pain, and it doesn't have to be physical pain, but any challenge, and face it and not let it defeat me. And I think more of us as human beings need to look with that perspective. It really, really helps you in professional life, in personal life, in whatever life you have, you know, leaning to the pain. That was a big takeaway from that leadership conference I would have attended.